Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views I've expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, are the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our telephone number in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this professor, David Ray Griffin, and he's formerly professor of philosophy and religion at the Claremont School of Theology in California. He was there for 30 years. He's the author of about 20 or more books. But this evening we're going to be talking to him about something which is perhaps a little off of what he would ordinarily be writing about as a professor of theology and religion. This is a book called The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration, M-9-1-1. And it's a fascinating look into what really happened on 9-1-1, that tragic incident that propelled America into the war in the Middle East, initially into Afghanistan, because we were told, of course, why we had to get the wicked Osama bin Laden, because he was behind the attack on the World Trade Center. Of course, we would never show anybody the proof that we had. We just said, trust us, we have the proof, and we would negotiate with Mullah Omar, who offered to send Osama bin Laden out of the country or even turn him over to another country for trial. No, we wouldn't do any of those things. We immediately insisted on going to war, but we didn't try to get Osama bin Laden. And that is the key. We have our articles out of the Washington Times quoting high government officials who said, we're not going to try to get Osama bin Laden first. Our whole philosophy is Osama bin Laden last. If we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify the war? How would we justify the war? We carry a book called Crude Politics. The publisher refused to try to market the book. It's written that it's all about Afghanistan, and the author, Paul Sperry, talks to people coming back from Afghanistan in the military, and they said, we weren't allowed to try to get Osama bin Laden. Dr. Griffin, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
You're welcome.
Well, let's go get into your book on the new Pearl Harbor, because you have a great deal of information in there. You talk about what happened on the day of the attack, and you raised a lot of questions about what happened that day, and, of course, how the president reacted when he heard that America was under attack. Would that be a good place to start, or where should we start with your book?
That's as good as any, yes.
Well, why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, many people know at least part of that story if they've seen Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, because he devoted several minutes to President Bush being in the classroom in Sarasota, Florida. And Michael Moore stressed the question of what was going through Bush's mind at the time. And also, like other people, they've said, he's our commander-in-chief. He should have sprung into action when he learned, after Andrew Card came in and whispered in his ear, that a second plane had hit a World Trade Center building, because they already knew officially about the first one, but Bush dismissed it as a terrible accident. But with the second one, there could be no doubt that this was a terrorist attack. And Michael Moore, in passing, just mentioned one issue, which is that the Secret Service should have done something. Well, that's the real key to the story.
All right, we're going to hold that for just a moment. We're going to have to take a break here.
Okay.
And then when we get back, we'll give the key to the story. Well, Dr. Stan here. Our guest is David Ray Griffin, formerly professor at Claremont College of Theology and Philosophy. So, of course, the points you make in your book is that ordinarily at this time, why they're hustling, why Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice in the bunkers, and the president is left in the classroom. It would have been such an easy matter to have crashed a plane in. Everybody knew he was going to be there. And they did not immediately hustle him away. Pick up the story there, please, because I thought this was such an interesting analysis, something I don't think anybody else had talked about.
That's right. And if you pay attention to what was going on simultaneously, Richard Clark says in his book, Against All Enemies, that he was running this teleconference, and Jane Garvey of the FAA had just come on and said at that moment they thought there were 11 planes that had been hijacked. Well, just think of that. So only two of them have crashed. That means there are 9 other planes out there. If you were the Secret Service, and of course they were listening in to that teleconference, wouldn't you assume that maybe one of those planes was going to come after the president himself? I mean, what better target for the terrorist than to kill the president of the United States? So you would assume that the Secret Service detail would have rushed him to safety because everybody knew where Bush was that day. It was a well-publicized photo op. And yet the Secret Service allowed him to stay there another almost 40 minutes after knowing that here America was under attack by terrorists, and George Tenet had already identified and said this looks like Al-Qaeda. And so this certainly looks suspicious. That is, that the head of the Secret Service detail knew that they were not under any real danger.
In other words, what you're suggesting is that they did not anticipate that that anybody would come after the president because perhaps they knew something that everybody else didn't know.
That's what it looks like, that they already knew how many planes were actually hijacked and what the actual targets were, and that one of them was not going to be the president. And, you know, these Secret Service agents, they would have been killed too if an airplane had been crashed into that school.
Well, I think another very interesting point was the president's reaction, which was not a normal reaction. You would anticipate that when somebody whispered in the president's ear that America's under attack, he would have immediately excused himself and gotten up and just hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is Professor David Ray Griffin, and we're talking, he's emeritus, of course, now, having taught for 30 years, but his point as far as what happened that morning is that the Secret Service knew, of course, that there was hijacked planes out there, that the initial report was that there were 11 planes that were hijacked, according to Richard Clark's book, Against All Enemies. So, but why wasn't the Secret Service worried about getting the president out of the schoolroom? Why weren't they worried about getting him someplace where he'd be safe? And Professor Griffin's point is, well, they must have known something. Otherwise, they themselves would have been targets. You would have think they would want to get someplace where the terrorists wouldn't know where they were. Did they know something ahead of time that they knew that the president was not a target? Certainly the vice president, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice had been taken to the bunkers, and they just left the president in the schoolroom. They could have gone in and simply forcibly removed him. That's their job. They don't listen to the president. They put their lives on the line. They tell him what to do in an emergency. But then nobody did that morning. That was so strange. And then the president sits there for 6 minutes reading about a goat. Now, to me, it almost appears as if maybe the president were frightened to death and were trying to collect his thoughts. What are your thoughts on that? Because what happened that morning is not at all logical.
Yeah, I won't try to read the president's mind for several reasons. But the next development in this story is that you would think that the 9/11 Commission would have really grilled the head of the Secret Service detail and said, "Now, why in heaven's sake, you know, your whole reason for existence is to protect the President of the United States. Why didn't you immediately jump into action and rush him to safety?" They did ask the head of the Secret Service during the 9/11 Commission hearings, and the head of the Secret Service said, "Well, we thought it would look unseemly for the President of the United States to get up and run out of the room."
But that's what he did 6 minutes later.
Well, no. Actually, he lingered around, and so that even a book that is very generous to the President and very appreciative of the so-called War on Terror and is a big supporter, and the author is writes for the Washington Times, he even called the President, he said he was our dawdler-in-chief that time because he just hung around and hung around and hung around afterwards, showing no concern whatsoever. But the point I want to get to is that then the Secret Service man said, "Well, we thought it'd be unseemly." And nobody on the commission said, "Now, just a minute, we're talking about the life of the President of the United States. Are you more worried about appearances than safety? And even if you were worried about appearances, you didn't have to run him out of the room. You could have said, 'Excuse me, Mr. President, we have to leave,' and walked him out of the room and walked him to the car and then driven him to safety." But nobody asked that question. They accepted that ridiculous response from the Secret Service as an adequate response.
Well, don't you really think that the whole purpose of the 9/11 Commission report was not to reveal what happened, but to conceal what happened? And if that had not been, they would not have sealed all the testimony that they took in secret for 30 or more years, because certainly Osama bin Laden is not interested in what that testimony showed. It would only be the American people that they're concealing the truth from.
That's right. And as you know, I have now written a second book that is called The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. And what I show is that with regard to all the evidence that contradicts the official story and tends to suggest official complicity, the 9/11 Commission systematically either omits any mention of this evidence, or if it does mention it, it distorts the facts in order to try to provide an explanation.
We know one of the most interesting parts of the initial investigation, which was the Select Intelligence Committee, that was the House Select Intelligence Committee, was Eleanor Hill's testimony, and she talked about the hijacker who defected in April of the year 2000 and went into the FBI office in Newark, New Jersey, and said, "I'm a hijacker. I was trained in Pakistan, and there's a whole crew of us here, six or seven. We're going to hijack your planes and crash them into buildings." And now, she did not say crash them into the buildings in what Eleanor Hill said, but apparently that is what he had told them, and this is covered in Paul Thompson's wonderful book, Terrorist Timeline. But did the 9/11 Commission even go into that incident where one of the hijackers had actually defected and told them exactly what was planned?
No, it's one of literally hundreds of stories that they omit. It is just, it is systematic. You can't go through and think, "Oh, well, they just didn't have room for this," or "they didn't know about this," because you see every story that can be used to support the administration's official story is included, but everything that could count against it is deleted. So you see, it is not an objective, independent, truth-seeking commission where they say, "You know, this is very puzzling, and we need to get to the bottom of this." And no, they just systematically delete it, or as I say, distort it. Now, with regard to the hijackers, to give another example, they begin the book, the 9/11 Commission Report, with an account of mentioning the 19 Al-Qaeda hijackers, Muslim Arabs. Later in the book, they give their photographs. They go into quite a bit of detail about their family lives and their girlfriends and so on. So there's no question about mistaken identity. They don't even bring that issue up. And yet, in the meantime, we've learned that at least six of these men are still alive. Some have been interviewed by British newspapers, The Guardian. This has been discussed on the BBC. One of them walked into an American embassy and said, what's all this stuff about my being dead? And not a word of this in the 9/11 Commission report. So from page one, anybody who knows the facts knows that this is a fraud.
And I really think that that is really so interesting. The one newspaper, one magazine that did cover that was Insight Magazine, which is published by the Washington Times. The only trouble was that, they were doing such a good job of covering things, suddenly they didn't have any advertisers, and they had to cease publication. But that magazine had so much good information in it. It had pictures. Apparently, when, of course, the issue of the six living hijackers who were supposedly dead was brought up to the head of the FBI, he said, well, that may be true, but we're not changing our story.
That's right. And the behavior of the FBI through all of this, as I go explain in the New Pearl Harbor, prior to 9/11, they systematically blocked investigations, and then on 9/11 itself they were on the ball and out there destroying evidence. So immediately after the Pentagon was struck, within 5 minutes they're across the freeway confiscating the video from the camera on that service station.
That was the one that would have actually had a movie of what really happened that day.
Sure, and the official story being that it was Flight 77, which is a Boeing 757, and, you know, we wouldn't be having to have all these discussions, and the Pentagon wouldn't have to be putting out, you know, saying, don't believe all these conspiracy theories that tell you it wasn't Flight 77. They could solve that, just put out the video. They've got plenty of videos themselves. They've got cameras all over that place. There are cameras on hotels around there and so on. So there are plenty of films that where they could show the truth, but they've chosen not to do this, and that can't help but make one a little bit suspicious. And then back to the FBI, after 9/11 then, they systematically closed down investigations that might reveal the truth. Sibel Edmonds has made it into the mainstream news somewhat, and she was allowed to testify to some members of the staff of the 9/11 Commission for 3.5 hours, and she told some blood-curdling stories about the total incompetence and even criminal behavior of her division of the 9/11 of the FBI. Not a word of her 3.5 hours testimony made it into the 9/11 Commission. So
that's part of the testimony that's been sealed for 30 years.
That's right.
Why would they want to seal it from 30 years? This is supposed to be an open a discussion so the American people can learn the truth. So if there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it?
Yeah, that's what you would assume. But when you see the makeup of the commissioners, you realize they were after something very different. And in particular, this book, the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, I have a subtitle, which is the Kane-Zelikow Report. So rather than just naming it after Thomas Kane, the chairman, I say that even more important than Kane was the executive director, who was Philip Zelikow, and he's the one who really directed the commission. He directed the staff of about 80 people, told them what groups to form into, what questions to investigate, and therefore what questions not to investigate, and then he had the final say as to what would go into the final report. And the important thing is that Philip Zelikow is essentially a member of the Bush administration.
And, of course, it was the president who actually picked Governor Keene to head the commission. So how could you get the president to pick the man who's going to investigate the administration? And I think one of the most interesting things was the August 6th presidential briefing headed, Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S. And when Condoleezza Rice was asked about that, she said, well, that didn't mean he was going to strike in this country. Just because it said that didn't mean he was going to do that. Then of course, she said, and besides that, it didn't say when he was going to strike, as if suddenly that excused the fact that they allowed.
Yeah, in fact, while they thought they were going to be able to keep that memo secret...
Hold that thought for just a moment.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Professor Griffin and David Ray Griffin. Go right ahead. And we were talking about the presidential briefing, the PDDB, it's called the Presidential Daily, briefing that he gets from the Intelligence Committee. So they tried to keep the August 6th PDDB secret. We do have copies of it, and we'll be glad to send a copy to any of our listeners that would like one. Although you can get it on the internet, but if you can't, we'll be glad to send it to you if you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you were saying something about when they thought they were going to be able to keep it secret because they really didn't want to release this.
Yes, Condoleezza Rice, who of course now is our Secretary of Secretary of State, said, that memo, it was nothing. It was a purely historical interest. And then, of course, when it surfaced, she still tried to maintain that until she was finally forced to read the title of it, and then it was read out by some of the commissioners, and they did embarrass her and showed very clearly that she had been lying. But of course, that was not close to the most extreme of her lies, but it was just one of the few that got revealed in public.
But you see, the thing is, it seems to be perfectly all right for government officials to lie. It's accepted that they lie, and they are never published for it, punished for it, and they are certainly never really severely criticized by the media. I mean, had the CBN an honest-to-goodness patriot, they would have bring that up every time they talked about it. And Condoleezza Rice, who lied about the PDDB of August 6th, you know, and they would repeat that over and over and over again. But that's all forgotten now. She's the Secretary of State. She's going around, of course, talking about the real danger we have from Syria in preparation for, we pulled our ambassador out of Syria. That's almost like a preparation for war. What do they really intend to do over there? Do they have a different agenda? Well, it all goes back to what happened on September 11th, which is why the book we're talking about, The New Pearl Harbor, really is so important because it's very well done. Now, what are some of the other points that you'd like to make?
Well, let's talk about the new Pearl Harbor itself, because that statement was the title of my book comes from this document written by the Project for the New American Century that formed during the years the Republicans were out of office, and it was composed of people such as Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Richard Pearl. And so many members who became key members of the Bush administration, and particularly members who had to do with foreign policy. And in this document, it said that, among many other things, such as that we needed to attack Iraq, regardless, you know, that it transcended the importance of getting rid of Saddam Hussein, that we needed to establish a presence in the Gulf, but the central point was transforming the American military, which was going to require an enormous amount of money, and here we had a problem because the Cold War was winding down, and we were talking about a peace dividend that suddenly we wouldn't have to spend so many billions of dollars for so-called defense, but could start spending on health, education, welfare, and the environment, maybe slow down global warming. But they said...
No, hold that thought for just a moment. We're going to have our other stations come on right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is David Ray Griffin, and we're talking about his book, The New Pearl Harbor. And of course, he's suggesting that this phrase, The New Pearl Harbor, really comes from something that was written by this group called the Project for the New American Century, the people who really control our administration. And he names them people like Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, And I might add John Bolton and Elliot Abrams and Liddy, who is a chief of staff for the Vice President of the United States. They were all, at least all except Richard Pearl, were part of the original 25 people who put together the Project for the New American Century. And for the skeptic out there, you can go to their website, www.newamericancentury.org. That's www.newamericancentury.org. And of course, verify what David Griffin is saying. And, of course, he's talking about something they have in there called Rebuilding America's Defenses. It's a 76-page treatise. You can pull it down, print it out, and you'll want to study it and go over it step by step. Do you want to pick up the story there, please?
Yes. So there, the main point is being able to bring about what they call this revolution in military affairs and transform the military in the way that Rumsfeld particularly has wanted to do so. And they say, but given the present state of things and the expense, this transformation is going to come about very slowly, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event such as a new Pearl Harbor. So that statement came out almost exactly 1 year prior to 9/11. And suddenly on 9/11, lots of people were saying here's the new Pearl Harbor. In fact, President Bush himself evidently, reportedly wrote in his diary that night, the Pearl Harbor of the 21st century happened today. So that phrase seemed to be in the air, and furthermore, after 9/11, almost immediately, Rice, Rumsfeld, Bush himself were talking about 9/11 as a great opportunity, an opportunity to reshape the world, an opportunity to carry out the agenda they had already on the books. And of course, that agenda involved attacking Afghanistan, replacing its government with one that would be friendly towards the American dominated pipe oil and gas pipeline, and then Iraq, which they had been chomping at the bit to some of them to attack since 1992, and more generally than more expensively even yet than all of those things is weaponizing space. And this is the truly frightening aspects of this, what Richard Falk has called the Global Domination Project. And you can find this on, or you used to be able to find this on the website. I think they've censored it now, but they said very frankly that the goal was to get complete control of space and be able to put weapons in space like laser cannons and deny the use of space to others so that others would not be able to put their satellites up. Only we would have weapons in space from which we could then attack any part of the globe almost instantly.
Well, of course, the thing is that this is what you do if you want to control the whole world. My fear is we have people there who really see nothing wrong with this idea of an American empire, where America will dominate the world. And really, of course, this is not the America I want. We, of course, have traditionally not tried to interfere in other people's affairs, well, at least theoretically. Unfortunately, I think over the last century, we've increasingly been getting ourselves involved with other countries. We've been involved in two terrible world wars. And of course, look at the end. Is the world a safer place now than it was before?
This question of the American empire is a most interesting one, and it's one of the things I've been focusing on. And in the 19th century, it was quite acceptable to talk about the American empire, but the assumption was it was going to be what Jefferson called it, an empire of liberty. It was a benign empire. But then, early in the 20th century, this became a bad term, and so we started denying that we were imperialistic and that America was an empire. And it was only left-wing critics, such as Noam Chomsky, that would use the E word and the I word. Andrew Bacevich, who teaches at Boston University, has written a fascinating book called American Empire. And he points out that after the end of the Cold War, it was a big revelation to him, because he had always accepted the view that, of course, we were not imperialistic and that generally we did things for good. And he showed that, he goes through and says, this is a great revelation to me as
hold
I reread.
Hold that thought right there.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Professor David Ray Griffin. We're talking about his book, The New Pearl Harbor. And in fact, I will have to admit that I never really understood that we do have an empire. This has been, of course, the purpose of the people who run our government for a long period of time. And as you read, of course, the Rebuilding America's Defenses on the website, newamericancentury.org, or you begin analyzing, we have troops in between 120 and 140 nations throughout the world today. Why do we have troops stationed all throughout the world today? Certainly everybody knows about the troops in Europe and about Japan and Korea, but we have troops in all of those dictatorships there, the former Muslim dictatorships, Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and all those various countries, and of course in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and we have military contingents in many countries in Africa and Somalia. And why do we have so many troops all throughout the world? Because we are dominating the world with our military, we're dominating with our finances, but the average American really doesn't understand that. They believe, as your friend did, you were speaking of, that things are as we've been told over and over again, but there's a great deal of difference between reality and perception, isn't there?
Yeah, and the reason I mention Andrew Bacevich is nobody can accuse him of being a left-wing critic. He is a very conservative supporter of the American empire. So even though the revelation has occurred and he realizes, A, we are an empire, and B, the whole notion that we are a benign empire is just nonsense, that we're like every other empire in history, from, you know, including the Roman Empire, which was extremely brutal, that empires are never kindly things. They're never benign. They're only interested in their own interests. And nevertheless, I admire him greatly, because he tells the ugly truth. Another example is Chalmers Johnson, who was also a conservative, but so he wrote his book Blowback, and now has written The Sorrows of Empire. Chalmers Johnson is no longer a conservative. He's become a very strong critic of the empire, shifted from the right to the left, and you know, when he began his research, he was not a left winger, so you cannot accuse him of just reading in the facts that he wants to. And he's the best one in terms of the question you just sort of rhetorical question you just asked, what are we doing? And he argues that we have a unique kind of empire, which is an empire of bases.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest this evening, David Ray Griffin. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, many people are, well, they don't like to hear this sort of thing. They love America, and I love America, too. I love the America that I believe in. But it is not an imperialistic America. It is not an America with bases all over the world, pushing a philosophy that, in many instances, backs dictatorships. So we talk about democracy, and yet we're backing the dictator in Uzbekistan, and most of those countries down there have ruthless dictators. Of course, they used to be communists, now they're ex-communists. I'm not quite sure what the difference is between a communist and an ex-communist. I think they all really are after power. But we back dictators all over the world. And certainly we, of course, talk about democracy, but we're backing the dictatorship in Saudi Arabia. We're backing the military dictatorship in Pakistan. Certainly, we're backing the one-party system that they have in Egypt, where they have votes, and I think 99.5% of the people always vote for Mubarak. And we have to ask ourselves, are we really doing, pushing the philosophy we talk about, or is there another agenda? Would you want to pick up on that with that thought?
Yeah, and this is very difficult for Americans, because we're all brought up with, as you know, in any empire, you're brought up with the idea that your country is good, and, you know, it makes a few mistakes, and now and then there are a few bad apples who do bad things, and, you know, we had this bad episode in Vietnam, but that was just, you know, we got over that and got back on the track. What is required to understand 9/11 and to be able to believe that our government really did arrange such a thing is really a flip in which, given the conventional view, we look at all these things, such as our support of Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, and, as you say, dozens and dozens of dictators, very brutal, murderous dictatorships around the world. And we say, gee, that just doesn't fit. I don't know why our government does that. Let's talk them out of it. Let's get, you know. And as long as you're thinking that, is everything is going to be very puzzling to you. But when you shift over and you see, ah, we're about something fundamentally different, that we've been about it for at least 100 years now, as Basevich stresses, and that the goal all along has been to achieve an empire of global scope, in which there is nobody else, nobody left outside the empire. That's the global domination project. And once you look at the world through those glasses, then suddenly everything falls into place. But then, of course, it's very distressing, because, as you say, the America you realize now you're living in is no longer the America that you brought up, you were brought up on in your mind, the America that is basically good and goes around the world trying to help people.
Well, we always start our programs by saying reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it'll be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I really think that sums up. We have these ideas. They're part and parcel of us. And when you challenge those, why, of course, well, it was sort of like I was listening to the Rush Limbaugh program today. I apologize for saying that, but Roger Hedgecock was on. And some poor fellow called in, Roger, he wanted to get out of Iraq. And Roger Hedgecock said, how could you want to get out of Iraq? Why, that's what Ted Kennedy wants. That's what Barbara Boxer wants. I mean, are you a Barbara Boxer and Ted Kennedy supporter? And the fellow sort of stammered. And he said, but, you know, I think we ought to get out of there. And Roger Hedgecock said, well, don't you think that the people there in Iraq are a lot better off today since we've been in there than they were under Saddam Hussein? And the fellow said, no, I don't think they're better off. I mean, a lot of them are getting killed here. Click. And that was the end of his conversation. Of course, they don't allow that sort of thing on so many conservative radio programs. So-called conservative programs, although I consider myself a conservative. I'm certainly not a mainline conservative, because on many issues, on this issue, I would back, of course, Ted Kennedy and Barbara Boxer. I think they're absolutely right. We should get out of there. And what was so interesting that they were bringing out that Hillary Clinton now has shifted, and she's supporting the president that we should not set a date to get out. And I really wanted to call in and ask Roger Hedgecock how he could possibly be on the same side as Hillary Clinton. But I didn't get a chance to. So what they've done is confuse the whole issue. What they want to do is divide us and getting us fighting back and forth. So we really can't see what's going on clearly. And we've right, left, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat. But the thing is, do you really value freedom, or do you want an American empire? Because if we have an empire, we'll lose our freedom for certain.
Yeah, and now to connect this back with 9/11 and the 9/11 Commission, if you read the 9/11 Commission report with the assumption that these people were there doing their best to try to get to the truth of what happened, and then you read all the evidence in the New Pearl Harbor, or, as you say, in Paul Thompson's book, or in Nafiz Ahmed's book, or many other books that have been written about this, you're going to be very puzzled, and you say, well, you know, didn't they know about this? Why did they ignore this? Why didn't they explain this? So you're going to be puzzled. But on the other hand, if you realize, oh, this is the Zelikow Commission, and he was there not only to whitewash, but actually to use the 9/11 Commission as an opportunity to promote the Bush agenda, in the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld agenda for the American empire, then it all makes sense. And so it all makes sense that they would even tell extremely audacious lies. Let me give one of the most audacious has to do with what time Cheney went down to the underground bunker that morning, at which place he gave the order, finally, to shoot down any aircraft that seemed to be threatening Washington or any city. And we've had prior knowledge, even from Cheney himself, that he went down there quite early, about 9:15. Norman Mineta, the Secretary of Transportation, testified to the 9/11 Commission that he got down there at 9:20, and Cheney was already there and in charge and had been there for a while. And yet the 9/11 Commission tells us that Cheney didn't get into the room until almost 10 o'clock, in other words, about 45 minutes later. Now, why would they tell such an obvious lie, which required that they suppress Mineta's testimony? That's some of that testimony that's going to be hidden until, what'd you say, 30-some years?
30 years. Although the Mineta's testimony we actually have, and we'll be glad to give that.
Yeah, because that was in public testimony.
But the rest?
But it has not been publicized since then. And so you know, if you were reading this, you would say, now, why would they tell such an obvious lie? Why would they revise the story so much? Well, it has to do with the evidence that Flight 93, which collapsed in, fell in Pennsylvania, was actually shot down by a U.S. military plane after Cheney had given the order to shoot down about 9:45. That's when Richard Clark puts it, sometime but probably between 9:45 and 9:50. So that was 15 minutes before the flight went down. Plenty of time, because Paul Wolfowitz had testified that a plane was actually following Flight 93 and was in position to shoot it down. This is the Assistant Secretary of Defense, so he surely knew what was going on. That was before, you know, the official story got congealed and they'd gotten all their ducks in a row, but that story had gotten out there. So now they try to keep it quiet. So the reason to say that Cheney didn't get there till virtually 10 o'clock is that everybody knows he's the one who gave the shoot-down order, not Bush himself. And if the plane was shot down at 10:03, as they say, well, then there wouldn't have been time, particularly because they then claim that Cheney didn't give the shoot-down order till about 10:10. So that the Flight 93 went down before the shoot-down order. So here they're telling an audacious lie that is contradicted by literally dozens, in fact hundreds of news reports over the preceding 3 years, and by the official NORAD timeline that had been put out at September 18th, 2001. And yet they're going to such lengths in order to deny that we deliberately shot down Flight 93 after it appeared that the passengers were about to wrest control and would have been in position to bring it down safely, in which the people on board could have talked.
And I really think that, you know, if they would lie about one thing, why wouldn't they lie about everything? And it's so obvious that they lied. We do have Norman Mineta's testimony, and he says he gets down there about 9:20, and there's Dick Cheney. He's already in charge, and they're monitoring this plane that's coming into Washington, D.C. Presumably it would be the plane that hit the Pentagon. It's all there in his testimony, not one word about it in the controlled media. That was what was so incredible, how you could cover up that story so that the American people would never know what was actually said in open testimony. Of course, in the closed testimony, you could understand how they could conceal that, but how could they conceal that story about, and Mineta talks about the man coming into the room and saying the plane is 50 miles out, and then a few minutes later the plane is 30 miles out, and then the plane is 10 miles out. Did the order still stand? And the vice president whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? And somebody asked Norman Mineta, what were the orders? And he said, I don't know. And you know, the most amazing thing, they never tried to find out what those orders were.
Well, and Mineta assumed the orders were to shoot down the plane, which, would, you know, he was talking about prior to in this case, prior to Flight 77, because there are two stories like this, one of them earlier, and one of them relates to Flight, or what they call Flight 77, in other words, prior to when the Pentagon was struck. And so Norman Mineta thought, well, it was the order to shoot down, but of course, whatever it was not shot down. So, and why would have the guy kept saying, well, does the order still stand? Obviously, if the order was to shoot down, it would have stood. He wouldn't have been puzzled. He would have been puzzled only if the order was not to shoot down something that was approaching the Pentagon. And so it's all very strange, because you know that these stories were written in dozens of newspapers around the country. Well, what about all those journalists who wrote those original stories? They knew then, if they read the 9/11 Commission report, that this was a lie. They censored themselves by not reporting it, or their editors censored them. Somehow, they just shut up and didn't reveal what they knew had to be a lie.
And, of course, what was so interesting to me was that Norman Mineta said he got over there, of course, it sounds like he got to the White House about 9:15, and they're evacuating the White House. They're getting everybody out of the White House. And, of course, he's then escorted down into this subterranean bunker where Cheney is. But if they're evacuating the White House at 9:15, why didn't they evacuate the Pentagon? Because, of course, the Pentagon wasn't stuck until 9:39, somewhere between 9:35
and 9:38.
Right.
Yeah.
So here they had certainly 15, almost 25 minutes to evacuate the Pentagon. Why did they leave all those people there when they knew the plane was coming in and when they were evacuating the White House? Why, unless maybe sort of like the South Tower, where they told everybody to stay in position, not to get out, even though they could see the flames in the North Tower, they could see the smoke coming out, they could see people jumping out of the window, but the people were ordered to stay in their positions, not to leave their desks.
It's very gruesome to think that Americans would have deliberately had fellow Americans stay in these two buildings so that the number of deaths would be greater than it would. But, you know, if you look back to that day, and let's say that these buildings had been evacuated, remember a lot of the anger and the energy coming out of 9/11 was the fact that, you know, many, many thousands of people were killed. What were they saying the first at first we were talking 5 or 6 or 7 thousand people. Finally it got down to about 3,000. But it was this idea that many thousands of people were killed that made it mandatory to attack Afghanistan in order to root out the terrorists. But if only a few dozen people had been killed, maybe it would have been more difficult to get the American people and the Congress to sign on to this blank check to that's called the War on Terror, which is really a war to expand the American empire.
And, of course, to also restrict the freedom of the American people in the name of course, maintaining our freedom and, of course, opposing the wicked terrorists. And I'm sure that Osama bin Laden really is not interested about the fact that they're collecting dossiers on American citizens and watching and tracking them and telling people to inform on other Americans. Is Osama bin Laden unhappy about that?
Well, he hates our freedoms, you know.
Right. That's why he attacked us, because, of course, because we are free, and he didn't want us to be free. Well, Professor, you know, as you analyze this, you spent a lot of time writing these two books. How can people get copies of the books of The War on Freedom and the 9/11 Commission Report? What's the title of that?
The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions.
Omissions and Distortions.
They are both published by Olive Branch, which is really, if you look on the web, you would look under Interlink Books, oneword.com. Many bookstores are carrying it. I know Borders do, Borders stores carry it, and many local bookstores. But also, you can get them both on Amazon.com. And in fact, if you go under the second book, the 9/11 Commission Report, they've got a package deal there where you can get both books, not quite for the price of one, but at an extreme reduction, so that I think you get both books for a total of $22. So it's a pretty good deal.
All right, fine. So that would be Interlink Books, or of course Amazon.com or Borders Books. They're excellent reading, a great deal of good information. I think at the end of the book, of course, there are some 44 questions that Ray Griffin asked, that questions that certainly the 9/11 Commission did not ask at all. And that is the great tragedy. But everything has to be done to keep the American people from learning the truth about what really happened. Because if they were to understand that there was, in my opinion, evidence of prior knowledge, that the government has lied about what they knew ahead of time and did nothing to stop. In fact, they actually ordered the people in the South Tower to stay there, knowing full well another plane was headed towards the South Tower, and nobody's ever asked, why didn't they tell the people just to get up and leave if they wanted to? But they didn't give them that
option. That's right. In fact, they said, go back to your offices. You're safe. There's no danger.
And, of course, if they, people who did that died, it was sort of like the Lusitania, when, of course, the Germans had said, we're going to sink the Lusitania in 1915. The State Department encouraged Americans to be on the boat. Why? Because they wanted an incident to get us into the First World War. Sort of like deja vu all over again. Professor, thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure having you.
Well, Stan, thank you for your efforts to get the truth out.
We'll keep doing it as long as we can. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I should have kept Dr. David Griffin on for the next 3 minutes because, well, if you're out there and you want to give a quick call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I think the information he has in his book is really very valid. His analysis of the 911 Commission report is very valid. They did not tell us the truth. They took literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of testimony in private, and that was never put into the report. The only thing you're going to see in the report are the things, of course, they did in public. And, of course, they sealed this information for 30 long years. And maybe at the end of 30 years, they'll seal it another 30 years because they cannot allow the American people to know the truth. And they still have much of the information about what happened at Pearl Harbor on December 7th. 1941, that's all sealed, that's still classified and secret and top secret. Why? Because they don't want the American people to know. They left 3,000 American boys to die there. Now, you can read actually the Encyclopedia Britannica or Colin Simpson's A Story of the Lusitania. In fact, that's included in my latest newsletter that I've been working on. But you go back and you see what happened in the First World War. They wanted to get America into the war. That was, of course, the purpose. America would get into the war. We would then the whole world would go into the League of Nations. We would have a world government, which it was all about. But the American people didn't want to go into the war. It was a foolish war. The American people knew it was a foolish war. On average, 100 to 200,000 men were dying every month in this war. And so how were you going to get the American people to go into the war? Well, they thought there'd be an incident of the sinking of the Lusitania. So the Germans announced that they were going to sink the Lusitania, and they ran advertisements in newspapers all up and down the East Coast saying, don't get on the Lusitania. Now, William Jennings Bryan, who was a patriotic American, was the Secretary of State, and he didn't want to get America in the war, but the establishment, what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, controlled the State Department, and they reassured the Americans who had called them and asked them, should I go on the Lusitania? You had nothing to worry about. You get on the Lusitania, boy. They're never going to sink the Lusitania. And 100 or so Americans believed them. And, of course, then they pulled the destroyer escort that was going to protect the Lusitania out. The ship went down in 10 minutes. And, of course, 1,198 lives were lost, 100 of them Americans. They needed an incident to get us into the First World War, but nobody talks about that anymore. Unfortunately, there's so much that nobody wants to talk about anymore. That's why we need to study history, for those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out across America listening to us, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you would like, of course, to get a copy of one of our newsletters, our January newsletter just that went out, and, of course, that deals with the book written by John Perkins entitled Confessions of an Economic Hitman. My February newsletter, which will not be available probably for a couple of weeks anyway, about 3 weeks, but that goes into the sinking of the Lusitania, how they knew the ship was going to go down, and that's why they encouraged Americans to be on the ship. In fact, Williams Jennings Bryan, the Secretary of State, who opposed America's entry into the war, actually resigned in June of that year. The Lusitania went down I think it was on May the 7th. And he resigned as Secretary of State in the early part of June of 1915 because he knew that they were going to try to get America into the war, and he didn't think we should go into the war, and we shouldn't have gone into that war. In fact, when we did go in, we prolonged the war for a year. 21 million people died in that war. Probably twice that many were injured, but we never talk about that. We never talk about the Second World War, where 50 to 60 million people died, because we're approaching World War III, and that's what this is all about. We're doing everything we can to incite the anger and the hostility and the frustration of the Muslim people throughout the world. And of course, there will be a blowback. There will be a Third World War. And I pray for my country when I reflect that God is just, and His justice will not sleep forever. One of the things you can do to really help would be to get a case of our books, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read it, you should. And if you'd like to get a single copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But we're offering a case of books at a very, very excellent opportunity to get a case of books at a very reasonable level. If you'd like to, of course, get a case of books, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and find out how you can get them. And of course, we want you to get them out all across America. We want you to lend them out. We want you to give them away. We want you to get people to understand there really are dark and sinister spiritual forces out there. There is another dimension. And of course, that's the demonic dimension. If you have not yet heard these or seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. That's they sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version. You need to really get that. Why? Because it will convince you more than anything I could ever say that there is another dimension, and many of our rock stars have sold their souls to rock and roll, sold their souls to the devil, quite frankly. And then, of course, I believe many of our politicians have done that, many of our people of great wealth, but it's not quite so blatant. They're not going to come forward and tell you what they've really done. It's very interesting that Hillary Clinton now is backing the president's position that we should not set a date to pull our troops out of Iraq, and she's then come into conflict with the positions taken by Teddy Kennedy and Barbara Boxer, who said we should set a date and get our troops out of there. After all, who in the listening audience wants to side with Teddy Kennedy and Barbara Boxer, even though they're entirely right? We need to get our troops out of the Middle East. We need to stop this war, and we need to stop it as soon as we can, before, of course, this whole thing degenerates into World War III, which is exactly what the elite want, because out of the carnage and horror of World War III will come the New World Order, the New World Religion. So remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Remember the video, they sold their souls for rock and roll, and of course, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. Excellent, excellent sources of information. My new video, Nender Called It Genocide, will take you into the background of how they're using fluoride and aspartame and mercury to poison us, to lower the testosterone level, to stop the fertility, and to destroy the minds of our youth. Remember again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because of course we have with us on the line right now Debbie O'Hara. Debbie writes for newswithviews.com. She gets a lot of great things up there on the internet. Now, of course, she's a mother and she's got a family to raise, but she finds time to do the research and write some fascinating articles. And tonight we want to talk to her about her article on what's happening in Germany. Now, what's happening to the parents over there who don't want to send their children to government schools, who do not want to have their morals corrupted in the schools, who do not want to have their faith destroyed in the schools, just as it's happening here. So, Debbie, I'm going to let you tell the story.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's good to be with you again here this evening. And there is a definite plan that is out there at work to capture the hearts and the minds of the world's children for a pagan socialist world government. And it's very important that we stay on the alert to what's happening not only in our nation, but in other nations around the world as to, you know, what's happening to affect parental freedom, because, you know, in turn, all these things are going to come back to affect us. And my recent article that you mentioned on News with Views exposes what's happening to some German homeschool families. And these are some families that are being persecuted just simply for following the Lord's mandate to train up their children in the way that they should go. Officials in Germany have declared homeschooling illegal. Seven families, in particular in Paderborn, have been warned by state officials that they're either to send their children to the government schools or their children will be forcibly taken there. Some homeschool families have faced heavy fines and have been threatened with losing the custody of their children. And I, you know, very strongly believe that we ignore this crisis over there to our own peril.
I think really what's going on in Europe foreshadows what's going on over here. Well, in Europe, why, of course, the socialist influence is very strong, and of course all this socialism is basically humanistic in its background, and their goal is to gain control of the minds of the children. And of course, as Europe begins to consolidate, and as they consolidate doing away with national sovereignty, centralizing power with a bureaucracy, just like they have in the Soviet Union, just as they have in China, and just as, of course, eventually they want to have in America. But what is so important to them is to control the minds of the children. You're absolutely right. So what is happening to the families over there? What are they doing about it?
I think, first of all, I think before we talk about, you know, what they're doing about it, I think I'd like to get in a little bit to what is happening to the children in the schools and why the parents are so concerned.
All right. What is happening to the children and why are the parents concerned?
Well, according to Richard Gunther, who is the director of the German Legal Defense Group, he says that parents are claiming that Christian values are being replaced by the state's amoral ones. The children are being raised to be promiscuous, the girls prostitutes. Supposed relaxation techniques are being used in the classroom where boys and girls lie down together in a darkened room.
Okay, hold on to those thoughts. We'll be back in just a moment with Debbie O'Hara talking about what's, well, it's happening in Germany, but the same things I fear are happening right here. Okay, Debbie, why don't you pick up the story there? As you said, that the things that are going on in the schools in Germany are aimed at destroying the moral fabric of these children. And of course, pick up the story.
Well, as I was saying, they use supposed relaxation techniques in the classroom where boys and girls lie down together in a darkened room, and they're encouraged to explore each other's bodies using a feather to find the most sensitive spots. They're also encouraged to touch each other anywhere that they want. The children are taught that homosexuality is just as normal as being a heterosexual, and that it's up to the individual children to discover for themselves their own sexual identity. And fourth graders are shown videos of sexual intercourse and are told that this is how babies are made. And if you can believe it, Dr. Stan, I mean, 9- and 10-year-old kids, they even have the video's narrator telling these children that sex feels good and is fun. And, you know, no surprise here that Darwin's evolution is taught as fact in the classroom.
Sounds like the schools in America.
Well,
maybe not quite this bad, but we're not far from it. We're so concerned about child pornography on the Internet. Oh, my goodness. Our children might get child pornography on the Internet. I think what they're doing in schools and the sex education programs are ever that as explicit as anything you're going to see on the Internet or in a dirty movie. But that's what's being done in the schools, but it's being done in the name of education.
Well, and just like you say, Dr. Stan, it is like here in America. You know, Darwin's theory of evolution is the state religion. They certainly don't want children believing that they're made in the image of God or that there are any set standards to live by. There is no absolute right or wrong. These kids they're being set up to believe that the state is God, because the only rules that count are those that are set up on the whim of whoever happens to be in control of any given situation at any given time. And this is really tyranny. A country that has no absolute basis for law sets up a situation where its people live in constant fear, because something that's right one day in the eyes of the state can be wrong the very next. And, you know, some parents in Germany have chosen to go into hiding rather than to subject their children to this type of criminal enterprise that we call government schooling. One family was helped to escape by a social worker who slowed the paperwork. And
hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course Debbie is telling us about the things that are happening in the schools over there, and of course the motion, the pictures, videos for the fourth graders going into all the details and where they show the intercourse and tell them that's how children, babies are made, and of course exploration of one another's bodies, and homosexuality is perfectly all right, and there is no God, and of course destroying their faith in God and in family and in country. These people who control the educational system in Germany are real experts in what they're doing, and they're destroying the minds and hearts of the children, focusing their attention on sex and immorality, and telling them immorality is perfectly all right. And, of course, the traditions that once, of course, marked Germany, and the really Germany had a great culture. But it sounds like it's being systematically destroyed. And, of course, according to Debbie, why some of the German families are even escaping. One of them, of course, was able to escape because a kind and concerned social worker delayed filling out the papers so that they could actually escape. Is that true, Debbie?
Well, that's right. And the social worker also warned that the judge was going to take away custody of the child in this case. Also, in another case, hardcore pornography was used to teach children in their German language course. And in that case, the judge ruled that parents have no right to decide on how their child is educated, and that the government school is the authority, even in areas of conscience.
Sounds just like it was when they had the fellow with the mustache over there in charge. I think his name was Adolf Hitler. The government would decide what was best for the children.
Well, that's exactly right, and he said that this judge said that fundamental Christians who do not want their children to attend government schools are not protected by the Constitution. And, you know, in my recent column on News with Views, where I talked about this particular subject of homeschooling, I asked my readers to write to the German embassy and express their concerns of, you know, what was happening to these homeschool families. And one kind gentleman sent me the response that he got from the German embassy, and he was told that mandatory attendance laws were first introduced in Germany in 1919 under the Constitution of the Weimar Republic to guarantee education for all, especially socially disadvantaged families. Of course, don't they always bring in it to help the poor when they bring in these tyrannical decisions? But anyway, they also said equality is seen as an important democratic ideal. The response, of course, mentioned tolerance and how Germany is an open, pluralistic society. It went on to say how parents play an important role in the education of their children and can and should pass their values on to their children.
Now, they're not going to do that when they're destroying the values. They're, you know, 8 hours a day in school. There's no way possibly that the parent can compete for that. That's why you should never send your children to government schools, whether in Germany or whether you're here, because you don't know what they're teaching your child. And, of course, until your child comes up with these crazy ideas, and you may never be able to reverse the damage that is done by an educational system that is intent upon destroying the soul of our children.
Well, and then it's interesting that this response went on to say that mandatory school attendance should be looked at as a complement and not an obstacle, and that religion is not a mandatory subject in government schools. But, you know, as you and I know, Dr. Stan, and is that all teaching is based on someone's religious worldview, and it's either Christian in nature or it's anti-Christian. And when someone talks about a pluralistic society, what are they really advocating but anarchy? You know, everyone does what's right in his own eyes. And the Bible very clearly speaks against that. And pluralism, you know, history shows us it's a temporary state. It's a nation that's in transition to tyranny. And a nation that promotes tolerance still has to have limits. I mean, are they going to promote religions that believe in cannibalism and human sacrifice? Or, you know, how about a living widow being burned on her dead husband's funeral pyre? I mean, there are religions that believe in these things. Are we going to have tolerance for those things?
Well, do we have a right
to impose our views on others? That's the sort of rationale they're going to have. And yes, there is right, there is wrong, and I don't really think that these religions are right at all. And I think we have to speak out against them. And it was really the Christian influence in India that stopped this idea of burning the widow on her husband's funeral pyre.
Well, you know, it's true. I mean, these things are wrong. We were either going to live by the absolute laws of God, or we're going to live under the tyrannical laws of a dictator. And notice, too, that the response, you know, talked about parents passing on their values. But obviously, as you mentioned, Dr. Stan, the state feels it has a right to undermine and trump the parents' right to instill values for 35 hours or more per week. So how can a Christian parent pass on Christian values with the things going on in the classroom that we mentioned earlier, where children are being sexualized at, you know, 8 and 9 years old? How do you undo those things?
You don't, and of course they do permanent damage to these children. Talk about the ultimate in child abuse. But it's not just going on in Germany, it's going on in our classes here in America. They're starting to indoctrinate our children in homosexuality, being perfectly normal in kindergarten in America. They're pikers over there in Germany.
Well, you know, that's true that our government schools here aren't any better than those in Germany.
But at least we can, of course, have the right to homeschool here. And apparently they do not have that right in Germany.
Well, that's exactly right. We do still have the right to homeschool. You know, a lot of people think that, you know, we don't have a problem here because the American people would never stand for that right being taken away. But they have to realize that there are people working continually and trying to undermine our rights. There are always, you know, laws or people trying to make laws to make homeschooling and private school kids take the same state tests as the kids in the public school. So if you don't follow along with this politically correct agenda, what might happen to your kids? Are they maybe not going to get into college or get the best jobs? Maybe not get a driver's license? Or maybe you'll be considered a poor parent and have your child taken away. So anyway, as you mentioned here too, Dr. Stan, in California, I understand that they're supposed to be teaching homosexuality from kindergarten on up.
Yes, they are.
And in kindergarten, they're actually also supposed to be able to decide their own gender. So what are you going to do, in grade school when you've got the boys wanting to hang around the girls', bathroom? What is anybody going to be able to do? Nothing. Maybe he thinks he's a girl. I mean, this is just, it's just craziness that's going on.
Well, we live in a world gone mad, Debbie, and there's only a few of us already sane, and everybody thinks we're crazy.
Isn't that the truth? I find it so hard to understand, why parents could send their children to government schools. I mean, I realize it's a sacrifice and, both time and money for families, but there is just no greater responsibility that the Lord has placed on Christian families than to raise up godly children. And you look at not only are amoral social values being taught in these schools, like homosexuality and abortion just being normal everyday decisions, but what can Christian parents hope that their children would gain in even learning academics in a non-Christian school?
Well, they're going to come out dedicated to environmentalism, and they're going to believe that global warming is going to, of course, eventually raise the ocean level, so that only the tip of the Empire State Building will be left out of the water. That I've seen books the government publishes that show that sort of thing. And, of course, they have all of this litany of things. They, of course, want to learn to be dependent upon the government. In fact, a recent poll of even college students said that the majority believe that the government should be able to censor papers so they couldn't put out irresponsible material. Where did they get these ideas that the government at any time in history could be trusted on to do the right thing? It was Thomas Paine who said, all societies are good, but government, even at its best, is a necessary evil. And John Locke said that government governs best, that governs the least. It was the restriction on the power of government that led to freedom. People understood that in the past, but our students today don't understand that. They trust the government, and they believe that wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a world government, and then we could have world peace, and they go, they believe in, we can't be cutting down trees, and we have to protect all the animal species, and oh my goodness, we've got to get people out of cars, and we're going to have air pollution, And they're not being educated, they're being indoctrinated, but they know far more about sex than they do about Shakespeare, far more about Marilyn Monroe than they do about mathematics, and we're in real trouble as a country, because our children are coming out of high school, and they can't compete in mathematics or physics or most other things with children from other countries in the world. And if our children can't compete, then we will soon be a third world nation. And it is because of the educational system, and of course because I think many of the things that are being done here in America and the way of fluoridation and mercury in the vaccines and certainly the aspartame and the other things that are poisoning their minds. What's so interesting, I might point out, is that the other side is very defensive. They're trying to put out all sorts of information right at the present time to say, oh, there's nothing to worry about in mercury and vaccines. There's nothing to worry about bad aspartame. Why, fluoride never hurt anybody. Why, it's in your toothpaste. I think we're making some progress. When the other side goes on the defensive, why, we'd want to keep the court press on, as they say in basketball. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Debbie O'Hare, and when we do return, we'd like your calls. From out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast at 464-8295, we're talking about education. We're talking about what's happening in Germany. And in Germany, parents are actually going into hiding so that the government doesn't take away their children. Could that happen here in America? Well, I think it not only can happen, it's going to happen, because they want to control the heart and the mind and the soul of your children. Well, our guest is Debbie O'Hare. Debbie, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story from there?
Well, you know, a lot of people, even when they know some of the amoral teaching that's going on, just feel that, you know, they get the best academic learning that they can in government schools, and parents don't feel that they could do it at home. And, you know, I like what J.I. Packer had said in his book titled Knowing God, where he said, quote, God is the reality behind all reality, the underlying cause of all causes and all events, unquote. You know, I don't think I've ever agreed with a statement more than that one. You know, what can you learn from a government school science class, or a history or math class for that matter, that has left out reality and cause? And when there's no purpose in what a child is learning, the subject doesn't make much sense. I mean, history just becomes names and dates. Science teaches that humans just grew up out of some blob of protoplasm that happened to wash up on the beach accidentally, and so there's no real meaning to life. And, you know, when subjects are taught devoid of any real meaning, it should be no surprise that our nation's children are academically inept for the most part. I mean, why learn? What's the point? There are plenty of things like sex and drugs out there that are much more fun. And so people just really need to understand that academics is really just as big a problem as the amoral social instruction that their children are getting in these schools. I don't really see any redeeming value whatever in sending children to a government school. And
of course, they're going to argue, well, but they need to learn how to socialize, you know. They need to learn how to get along with other children. You don't want to raise them at home all by themselves when they're not going to have this interaction, do you?
Well, the thing is I hear more people say that the homeschooled children are far better socialized because, I mean, where else in the world do you go out and you're stuck with 30 people, you know, in a room exactly the same age that you are? I mean, you get the homeschooled kids who will pull up a chair in a group of adults and feel comfortable speaking because they deal with all different ages and people all day long and not just, you know, kids that are the exact same age. And, of course, too, you say, who wants little socialists anyway? Or people socialize negatively because that's what these public schools really are. Your kids are going to go get beat up or maybe shot at or, you know, dragged off for an abortion without you knowing what's going on. And you look back at the days where, you know, people lived on farms, and how close was your nearest neighbor? And boy, I tell you, people were socialized back then. I mean, they were good people and didn't have the problems that we have today.
And I think you're absolutely right. You know, Debbie, I have an opportunity many times to talk to children who come from homeschooling families. And I will tell you that there's all the difference between night and day in their demeanor, in their dress, in their appearance, and in just the way they can carry on an intelligent conversation with you. They're educated. They're concerned about what's going on in the world. They have real concern. They don't simply parrot back what they've learned in school about, oh, the environmental crisis, and, oh, I have a degree, or I've taken these courses in environmentalism. I know all about these things. They ask intelligent questions. You can carry on a conversation with them. Whereas I fear that many of our young people today are simply victims of the indoctrination that they get in government schools that is intent upon controlling what the children of this country think and ultimately what they believe. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Debbie O'Hara, and she writes for World newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. And you can go up on the internet and pull down those articles, and I think you'll be fascinated by Debbie's writing. She does a good job. Debbie, how many children do you have?
I have 8 children, and I have 7 of them still at home, and you know, a couple of them have been in and out, you know.
how do you have time to write all those great articles looking after 7 children?
Well, I've got to tell you, it's not easy, Dr. Stan. It's not easy finding a quiet, peaceful moment around here all the time. But you know, some of my kids are older, so, you know, they help with the younger ones and help with chores and getting things done. So, anyway, the Lord's been good, and I do find time to get some things done.
And I think it's really so important. A lot of people out there say, what can I do? I'm just so busy. Well, if Debbie can be raising seven children, and are you homeschooling them, or how are you handling it?
I have homeschooled most of my children. And I, my oldest one is 32. That's the one that doesn't live at home. And you know, I had not even heard about homeschooling back then. So I just really, you know, encourage people out there today from, you know, the youngest age. Some of my kids I didn't even pull out until high school. You know, I don't even think I knew much what was going on until 10 years ago. And once I realized, you know, the danger that my children were in, I mean, I really got busy. And, I pulled kids out of school, like I say, even in high school and junior high, because I knew the dangers they were in there. And it was very hard to realize that, you know, even people at church and the pastor weren't speaking out what was going on. And you start realizing, gosh, I don't know these kids that I've been raising, when they start, you know, coming home and talking about abortion like it's just an option. And, oh, my gosh, I thought, who are these children? And so anyway, I just realized I was the one that was going to have to get busy, and you know, my husband and I find out what was going on out there and take control of our children's education. And we're so glad we did, because it's been a real blessing for us too. You know, they say if you want to learn something, teach it. And I've learned a lot.
And that's absolutely right. In fact, of course, I learn a lot whenever I have to write a newsletter. I have to write one every month. And so, you know, then I got to get out the books and the encyclopedias. And it's amazing how much you learn when you're teaching or when you're writing. We benefit from that as well. And of course, the people who get a chance to read your articles benefit from the material that you put out there, which I think is really great. And I always enjoy the articles you write. And for the people out there who say, what can I do? Well, with Debbie, if she can be raising seven children and homeschooling seven children and running a house, she can find time to write articles. You can write articles. You can get them up on the Internet. You can talk to other people. You can distribute tape sets or books or whatever it would be. Every one of us can do something, and certainly if Debbie didn't know what was going on in the world until 10 years ago, there are people waking up every day and they just don't know what to do. There's so much that can be done. Each one of us has to find what we can do and then accept that as our responsibility. Because if the people, the good people of America, aren't going to take a stand, I can guarantee you that the wicked people on the other side are willing to dedicate the whole of their lives to destroying our freedom. We must do everything we can to preserve it. So when we get back, we're going to a break here in just a couple of minutes. But when we get back, we'll certainly appreciate your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, that's 464-8295. And well, Debbie, you know, what sort of response did you get from your letter? Did you say that some of the people were writing the German embassy, and of course they were getting sort of this standard form letter back that's just saying, oh yes, you know, we want the parents to instill their values, but they don't really want the parents to instill their values, do they?
No, they certainly don't. It was really wonderful. I got a response from a gal in Brazil who had translated my article into Portuguese and put it into a Christian, you know, newsletter down there. So, you know, this is great. Like I say, people, even busy people, can find time to do something and to get word out, even if it's just passing out articles. You know, just writing a letter to the editor, a short article themselves or something. There's something we can all do.
Well, if you can't do that, why pull down Debbie's articles and pass those out? And, of course, the Internet has given us a wonderful opportunity to get information, to disseminate information. A lot of wonderful websites. Do you have a website, Debbie?
No, just newswithviews.com. That's one thing I haven't found time yet, is to put up a website. Even my family keeps bothering me to do that. So.
Well, you have to have a little expertise, too. You really have to know what you're doing. Fortunately, my son put up our website and did a real good job. But the place to go is www.newswithviews.com. That's Paul Walter's website. And they get something like, I think, 10 million hits a month, something like that. An awful lot of people are reading. They're getting the information. They're reading Debbie's articles, and well, you need to be reading them as well. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Debbie O'Hare. And we're talking about her article, which recently was going into what's going on over in Germany, where some of the parents don't want to send their children to government schools. And, of course, it's illegal in Germany to homeschool. Do you know anything about the rest of Germany, or is it every one of the individual states, because they do have various states over there?
There are some things, you know, I don't know all the specifics, but yes, there are some things going on in other states over there. And if people would go to Homeschool Legal Defense Association's website, they have a lot of specifics, not only of what's going on there and in the separate states over there and what's going on in families in other states, but they also keep up on what is going on here, you know, in our country, state by state, because there is always something cropping up. There are always there's always legislation trying to take away our freedom to homeschool. And it's something we really need to stay on top of. And, you know, I hear all the time, you know, people saying that in a free country like America, we don't have to worry about that. They're not going to outlaw homeschooling because the people here wouldn't let it happen. And, you know, I don't know, this freedom might not be directly outlawed. That doesn't generally seem to be the way they do things in this country. You know, it might be more like our almost non-existent Second Amendment rights that, you know, instead of directly outlawing, they just legislate it to death until they get almost the same results. And, you know, it's interesting, too. Many people will say, well, gosh, you know, we don't have any problems right now. We have this great Christian president who's on our side, and he certainly wouldn't let Christian parents lose control of their children's education. And I think we need to ask that if President Bush is such a concerned Christian, why would he have rejoined the United States back into membership in the pagan global school board, UNESCO? And this became a reality back on October 1st of 2003. And President Reagan had removed us from this you know, toxic organization almost 20 years ago, saying that UNESCO exhibited, you know, in his own words, an endemic hostility toward the institutions of a free society. But President Bush tells us, you know, UNESCO has been reformed, and he says, quote, that America would participate fully in its mission to advance human rights and tolerance and learning. Well, we can look at what tolerance and human rights advances is UNESCO talking about. They're very diligent in promoting the Pagan Earth Charter. And that's
hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Debbie O'Hare. Our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Debbie was saying that a lot of people say, oh, well, they would never take away our right to educate our children here, the right to homeschooling. And yet, of course, there are some states where you are not allowed to homeschool your children. Fortunately, there are not that many of them. That was why Randy Weaver and his family moved up to Idaho, because the state where they were living was going to take their children away because they were homeschooling. Well, right now, most states, why, you can homeschool, and the homeschool legal defense system is doing a pretty good job, you know, of maintaining these rights. But there are people who really want to take away certainly our ability to educate our children, because they want to control their minds. This is what it's all about. Control the minds of the children, you control society. And, of course, Debbie then was saying that the many people who say, well, of course, this will never happen when we have a Christian president in the White House. And, of course, everybody knows that George Bush gets up every morning and reads the Bible, and then he prays and gets a message from God to direct him through the day. But then Debbie asked if he really is a Christian president, why would he rejoin UNESCO? Because UNESCO, of course, is part of this whole pagan world movement that supports abortion, it supports the press control, it supports the government controlling the minds and hearts and souls of our children. UNESCO is an evil organization, and you can say all you want to about it, nothing has changed. The first Secretary General of UNESCO was Julian Huxley, who was a dedicated socialist, and it's gone downhill ever since then. So you pick up the story from there, Debbie.
Well, you know, as I was saying, UNESCO is promoting the Pagan Earth Charter. The Bible is definitely out. There's a prepared global curriculum, you know, based on the Earth Charter that's being used to indoctrinate our children into being little one-world New Age socialists. Our children are being taught to hate Christianity because it's intolerant. And they don't realize that they're actually being taught to hate humanity itself.
No, they really don't understand, because, of course, they don't have the foundation. You take away the Christian foundation, and, of course, there are no absolutes. There is no right or wrong. And that's the whole purpose of education today, is to destroy the belief of our children in our Creator and our God and our Lord Jesus Christ.
Well, I don't know about in your area, Dr. Stan, but I know here, at least not too long ago, I don't know if they're still doing, I haven't checked recently, but I know at the grade school here they're saying pledges to the universe and how they will, you know, respect all, you know, living things, and I think living things, you know, while we're aborting, you know, preborn babies, I guess that doesn't count, but, you know, I guess they're talking about eagle eggs and all these other things. They're saying, you know, a pledge to the universe. They say a pledge to themselves, and then the third pledge they say is the pledge, you know, to our flag, and of course it's watering it down, you know, because the pledge means nothing when you're saying three of them there. But anyway, you know, as I was saying, the children are being taught to hate humanity itself because humans are looked at as the plague on the earth.
And I think that is so important. They really are being taught that mankind is the enemy of everything going on. It's mankind that's destroying the environment. It's mankind that's using up the natural resources. There are too many people in the world, and the major thrust, the major enemy of the world is mankind itself. And that idea is expressed over and over again, and pretty soon these children begin to believe it.
Well, yes, you know, they're taught to worship the earth and to revere indigenous peoples that were all pagan earth worshippers. And, of course, our tax dollars are being used to push this stuff. You know, the U.S. pays for more of these U.N. programs than any other country does.
Well, of course, but you see, the major drive behind this whole world paganism is coming from the United States. It is America's military and financial might that are being used to push this pagan New World Order, because it is a pagan New World Order. This is what people don't understand. You can't understand anything going on. You can't understand the Earth Charter. You can't understand this drive towards world government unless you understand there are occult forces behind this. Who wrote the Earth Charter? Gorbachev. Gorbachev is an occultist, and you go to any of his meetings, there's always a tremendous about spirituality, but not about Christian spirituality. Maurice Strong was the second author of the Earth Charter. His wife is a witch, according to an article we have from from West Magazine. We'll be glad to send you a copy of that. And there, this La Baca Grande in Colorado, why the witches and the shamans and the yogis and all the people of the occult religions are there. And, of course, his wife, Maurice Strong's wife, prays the sun up every morning, and it rises in the east and it sets in the west, and she's convinced that she's doing that because, well, this is where the witches and this is where the Satanists get together. They're at this place that's set up by Maurice Strong. And the third person who wrote the Earth Charter is a man named Professor Stephen Rockefeller. And if you want to know where he's come from, we need to get his book, Science and Nature. And he writes a chapter in it, and I will tell you, you see the picture there of Gaia, Mother Earth, and it came right out of the pit of hell. So, anyway, of course, the whole idea of the Earth Charter is paganism. That's what they're teaching our children, and the average parent, first of all, doesn't even know what the Earth Charter is. And secondly, they have no idea what's being taught. And their children in school, until one day their child comes home and says, you know, mankind is the greatest plague on the earth, or what's wrong with abortion, or shouldn't people have the right to do whatever they want to, or we have to tolerate all sorts of religions, or, and on and on and on.
Well, you know, speaking about the pit of hell, you know, UNESCO totally supports the, United Nations Population Fund, which is, of course, assisting China's brutal population control program. You know, in communist China, a detailed record is kept of, you know, women's menstrual cycles and their reproductive history. A pregnant woman who doesn't have a permit to have a child is forced to have an abortion. Babies are aborted even in the ninth month and injected with poison and thrown in a trash bin. Millions of women are forcibly sterilized. And, you know, these programs are all run by Marxists who do not look at children as a gift from God, but as a gift from government. And why would America participate in such an organization except for the fact that our own leaders are Marxists and agree with these goals?
They see nothing wrong with them at all. And I think every American should ask is, why would our Christian president take us back in UNESCO?
Well, yeah, when you look at what UNESCO's doing, and I understand, I don't know, you probably know more than I do, Stan, what all they're involved in. You know, it seems like every UN organization has its tentacles in all, you know, different areas. You know, UNESCO's not just in educating our children. You know, it's in this population control, as I mentioned. I know they're behind, you know, private property loss, you know, because they're in the UN biospheres, and that is UNESCO. And I'm sure they're probably in many other things as well. And I'm sure a lot of people still think, well, you know, this forced sterilization thing that's going on in China would, you know, never happen here in America. I mean, we Americans just don't go for those things. But, you know, like I say, it's our tax dollars that are being spent to do those things. And it was Ted Turner, who I know has given at least $1 billion away to the UN, who says that, you know, anyone who doesn't agree with China's brutal policy is just a dum-dum.
Right, of course, and we know how brilliant Ted Turner is and what a great success his personal life has been. Well, let's go to Roger calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Roger, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, well, first, if you like my slogan, sustainable ignorance and sustainable brainwashing for a sustainable Soviet.
All right, that, of course, the end result will be a feudalistic system, exactly as communism is, exactly as socialism is, exactly as Nazism is, exactly as fascism is. It is a return to feudalism with the ruling lords and, of course, everybody else enslaved. So you're absolutely right on there. Do you have another comment or question?
I wanted to ask. It's like, you know, here, you know, I call into this show, and most people do. We're mostly preaching to the choir, as it were. Now, I call in the local mom-and-pop station, much like probably most of yours are in the mornings, and it's like you feel kind of lonesome that there's no one there to back you up. Now, the host often likes what I have to say. There's some difference there, but it's like hardly anyone else, you know, we got to do something about these crushing taxes, which they are truly crushing. Very few people call into these politicians that are on these shows and demand that they cut the spending. And, you know, it's like, you know, they think they can somehow get the socialist gravy from the money tree and not have to pay through the arm.
Okay, well, what was the question or comment?
Well, it's just somewhat dispiriting at times because it's like, you know, I said about having to cut the state budget at least 10 or 20%, cut all the local school budgets by, say, one quarter at least. That way it would require some volunteer nosy grandmothers to come in and ride herd on the social engineering.
All right, what we really need to do is cut spending, not raise taxes. Would you agree with that?
Well, and cutting taxes without cutting spending doesn't make any sense, you know.
Right.
That's what we hear all the time, you know, from the great so-called conservative Republicans, how they're cutting taxes. Well, spending keeps going up, so it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it really does if you understand that the real purpose is to destroy the value of our currency and our monetary system. There is no way you could end up with any other end result. And this, I fear, is what they're going to do, is create a monetary crisis. And, of course, the people then, when their money becomes worthless, where will they look for help? Why, they'll look to the government to solve the problem, the very problem that the government has created. They have no intention of trying to pay off our debt. There is no way that they can possibly pay off our debt with a massive debt, and unless you did away with Social Security or raised the level of entry into this to about 80 years of age and cut back on Medicare benefits. There's no way they can provide everything that they promised the people. So the fact that they are increasing spending and maintaining the tax cuts suggests to me that they really have an intention, and that is the best way, of course, you don't have to pay your money back when you borrow it, is to destroy the value of the currency, and you can pay it back with worthless scrip, and you've fulfilled your obligation. The only trouble is that people have lent you the money, the people have put their money into the pension funds, the people have put their money into bonds and into annuities and into CDs, are going to become impoverished. And of course, that's really what the whole purpose of the Earth Charter, if you read point number 10, they talk about redistribution of the wealth within nations and between nations. And how do you redistribute our wealth? Well, you destroy the value of our currency, you impoverish the American people, and then we'll all be poor. Anything else, Roger?
Just keep up your excellent warfare for the hearts of men and the restoration of the Republic. God bless you all.
God bless you, too. Thanks so much, Roger. And our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, you know, I think it should be so obvious. If you stop and think where we're headed, they know exactly what they're doing. The people in charge are not stupid. And as Debbie says, you can't cut taxes and increase spending. One of these days, the day of reckoning is going to come.
Well, what I think is so interesting is I hear from people all the time that ask me, you know, what can you possibly have against socialism? I mean, Jesus was a compassionate person, wasn't he? And I'll say, well, yeah, that's absolutely right that Jesus was compassionate, and that's why he would never support socialism. I mean, socialism is force. It comes to the barrel of a gun. You know, it's taking by force from those who produce and giving to those who don't produce. Jesus certainly wanted us to take, you know, care of the poor, but he talked about, you know, free will and compassion. And there is certainly nothing compassionate about taking from someone else to give to someone in need. It's only compassionate when I give what's mine. And in fact, socialism, it takes away compassion from a nation because I think people tend to feel, you know, I pay a lot of taxes. You know, it's the government's place then to take care of the poor, and it makes it easy for them to just ignore people that are in need. You know, government bureaucracy can't show compassion. Only individual people can do that. But then again, there's the whole thing about the fact that socialism doesn't really help the poor anyway. It just builds up a giant government bureaucracy that really controls the entire economy, you know, a feudal system.
Well, you know, when they tell me what's wrong with socialism, I always like to say, well, socialism is a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory. But it doesn't work without force. Somebody has to be in charge. And if you really think that we have a democracy and we're going to elect our leaders, you really don't understand how the system works, because, yes, you elect your leaders, but who controls the leaders? Why, they're controlled by the people with great amounts of money who buy and sell politicians, and I believe in Washington, D.C. today, we have the finest politicians that money could buy. But I think the best definition of socialism was written by George Bernard Shaw. It's in his book, The Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism and Capitalism, on the last page of the appendix. And any of our listeners who would like a copy of this will be glad to send it to them. If they ask for just George Bernard Shaw's definition of socialism, and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But this is what George Bernard Shaw said. Nobody has written a definition of socialism. Let me explain it for you. Under socialism, you would be forcibly fed, housed, and clothed, whether you liked it or not. And if it were found that you were unworthy of all of our efforts, it might be necessary to put you to death in a kindly manner, but while you lived, you would have to live well. That is the definition of socialism. The only trouble is that in socialist countries like Russia, and Russia was a socialist country, the only difference between the philosophy of the international socialists and the communist socialists was how you were going to get there. In other words, other communists wanted to get there by revolution, the socialists want to get there by evolution. But in both cases, you have a ruling elite, and then, of course, you have an impoverished people, and you have a police state. You have a totalitarian society, and you use the police to maintain your position of power. There is nobody who has more power than the leaders of a socialist nation. Nazism was national socialism. Fascism was corporate socialism or state socialism. Communism was, of course, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. It was simply the same sort of socialism that the Europeans want. In fact, that's what the European Union is all about, socialism. The average individual has no idea, because nobody ever tells them, that socialism and feudalism are exactly the same. A ruling elite and everybody else is a serf. Oh, you talk to all you want to about the poor people, but they're not really interested in poor. That's how they justify taking away the freedom of the people. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. But remember, socialism is a wonderful theory, but it doesn't work without force. Well, I guess this evening is Debbie O'Hara. You know, Debbie, I used to really believe in all of these socialist things. It was the hardest thing for me to suddenly realize that everything I'd learned in high school and college had been a lie. Did you ever have that problem, or maybe you were always a conservative?
No, I was not always a conservative. I mean, you believe it, I was a Democrat at one time and moved to Republican and kind of went, you know, just listening to other people and... You know, I don't know, I guess I was a Democrat because we were a democracy. I mean, even my mom said, where'd you get that from? We were even always Republicans. So, you know, I don't know, something I picked up in government school probably. I mean, probably 15 years ago, someone would have considered me a Marxist. I mean, I would have had no idea what that even was. You know, you read the local newspaper and you watch the TV and you think you're being a good parent and a, you know, decent citizen, and it really is quite an awakening one day when you do finally discover that I hadn't a clue what was going on all those years.
How do you feel about what the Republicans are doing now?
Oh, well, probably the same that I feel about what the Democrats are doing now. There's not a dime's worth of difference, and, you know, that really is the truth. In fact, if anything, the Republicans are, I'm probably more afraid of them, because it seems that the Christians tend to fall asleep, and that the Republicans can push ahead programs that the Democrats would never have been able to do.
You're absolutely right. In fact, the No Child Left Behind educational program that George Bush introduced was really Ted Kennedy's bill. But they couldn't tell the American people that, nor any more than they could tell them that last year the Bush Foundation, which, of course, on the board of directors are George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush, and they have a foundation where they give an award to the most important or successful or the beneficial person in the country. And last year, you'd never guess who they gave that award to. Teddy Kennedy. So you can check that out on the Internet if we have it somewhere. I don't really know where the article is, but I'm sure we could get that off the Internet. Why would the Bush Family Foundation give a reward to Teddy Kennedy? Why? Because George Bush implemented his educational bill to control the minds and hearts and souls of our children. Debbie, we're out of time. Do you have one last thought for our listeners?
Well, I guess just, you know, the main thing I want to mention in bringing it back to the homeschooling crisis is, you know, Jesus gave us the Great Commission, you know, in Matthew 28 to make disciples of all the nations and teach them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And how can we carry out this commission when we ignore his mandate to raise up our children in the way they should go? We're not even making disciples of our own children.
You're absolutely right. God bless you. Thank you so much, Debbie.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, that's Dr. Stan back here, and I think that Debbie pretty hit the nail on the head as she points out that God gave us a great commission to go into all the world to preach the gospel. But how can we do that when we don't even bring up our own children in the way that God told us to? And, of course, when you turn your children over to the government schools, why, you can be sure that they're going to get an atheistic, a sensual miseducation, so that when they graduate, they won't be able to compete effectively with children from other countries anywhere in the world, because they're deliberately altering the very foundation of our children's beliefs and, of course, their knowledge and their understanding. So I think Debbie's absolutely right. We've got to get our children out of government schools. If you love your children, find some way to get them out from under the government influence. Now, to understand what's really going on and why evil people like Teddy Kennedy are pushing such things, the destruction of the moral fabric of our society, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And it is available simply by itself, or if you'd really like to be effective, why, we're offering full cases of that, 62 copies of the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you want to find out how to get that and what a good deal it is, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and just talk to them in there about the case of Brotherhood of Darkness. I think it's an excellent opportunity to get the information that you can lend to others, you can give to others. Get them to read it. And when they do, well, many people's lives have been transformed because they suddenly begin to understand there is another dimension out there. There is another dimension of organized evil which works at the highest levels of our society. It works within the music industry, within the foundations, our corporate, within our government itself. And of course, you, of course, need to get the Brotherhood of Darkness, either an individual copy, or you can always get that 62 books in a case, and I think that you can change an awful lot of lives with that. It's an excellent tool. We've disposed of actually over half of the number we needed to get this special printing done, which is going to be done very, very soon. And once these are offers, once all the printing has started, why, of course, we will not be able to make the offer again. So if you'd like to get the case of our books, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We have a great new video. It's called None Dare Call It Genocide. And it goes into the background of how they are poisoning our people, how they're using fluoride to poison the minds of our children, and, of course, to lower their testosterone level and of course, influence their endocrine system and make their bones more fragile. And, of course, this is especially true in adults. And then, of course, they're using aspartame. And what does it do? Why, it influences reproduction. It influences the mind and influences the endocrine system. And then the mercury in the vaccines. Oh, they say we've taken most of it out of the childhood vaccines. We've just left it in all the other vaccines we want to give them, like the influenza vaccine, and you better bring your six-month-old child down so we can give them toxic doses of mercury and destroy their minds. They know what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen, because we're dealing with organized evil. You need to get our video, None Dare Call It Genocide, and it goes into so many of the other things that are going on. A very excellent overview of what's going on. And then we have the new video. We just got the supply of them in. It's the talk that Bill Sardi gave, and it's really very well done, and it's got lots of documentation in it. And it's Bill Sardi's video on, of course, the drug industry and how they're poisoning our people. And give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for None Dare Call It Genocide or Bill Sardi's video. We have a great new video on Vaccine A, goes into the background of the Gulf War illness and how they destroyed the lives of over 200,000 of our troops. They will admit 174,000 of the 695,000 men they sent to the first Gulf now are on disability because of Gulf War illness, but there are a lot more out there you're not hearing about. Remember our website, RadioLiberty.com, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow night at the same time, may the Lord be with you.